children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Align, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages of all mental health issues, including addiction, school issues. If you know someone that could use a referral for a support group, for a parent support group, for a therapist, or an inpatient or outpatient programs, please call our confidential helpline, 718-758-0400. Again, I'll repeat our number. Remember, it is confidential. You can call anonymously from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And our number, again, maybe it's for yourself, a neighbor, a friend, a loved one, someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Jot down our number, 718-758-0400. Tonight I have on with us a very, very dear friend, a colleague for 20 years. I have been working along with Michelle Cohn, who's an LCSW. She's a psychotherapist, a psychoanalyst. She's in private practice in New York City. She does group work and individual treatment. And I must say, Michelle has facilitated parent groups for parents that have children with eating disorders for a long time. And I would like to welcome you on tonight. Thank you for coming on. How are you, Michelle? Long time no speak since, what is it, many, many months. How are
you? Long time. I'm great. And it's so lovely to be here with you. This is delightful.
Yeah, well, thank you. And we used to have this amazing parent group with parents, their children of all ages that were suffering with eating disorder. And that was just an amazing, powerful group for parents.
Yes, yes, it was.
And we hope to get it going again. But for now, we will be speaking about a whole nother topic, something that we don't hear much about, and it's so important to talk about it. And that's the topic of chronic pain with association with depression, sleep disorders, obesity, and so many other side effects when one has chronic pain and how it affects one's mental health. So, Michelle, to start with, what makes you want to speak so much on this topic, please?
Well, you know, I didn't want to speak on this topic. The topic chose me. I was regular therapist going about my daily life and, you know, going to analysis and supervision and seeing patients. And in 2015, I started to get sick and had this facial pain that just, it just didn't go away. And I would go from doctor to doctor and nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. And it was terrible. I became a medical patient. I became a medical patient that doesn't get better, which is one step above a chronic psychiatric patient, because people don't understand pain. And I've had to learn the hard way through my own medical experience that pain is pain. It doesn't matter if it's psychological or physical. However, it's much easier to talk about physical pain. There's no stigma, even though there is a lot of, you know, feeling that you're not good enough because you're sick and all that stuff. But it it doesn't hold a candle to people who are really struggling in silence and isolation. So pain is a mental health, is mental illness is a chronic pain.
Absolutely. And I'm so, so sorry that you're suffering with all this pain. Michelle, I know that pain in general, somebody has back problem or somebody like yourself, it could bring up a lot of feelings for the caregivers, also your spouse or children.
Mm-hmm. And yep.
I really want to touch on that as well, because while you are looking and you're negotiating in the medical world what it is and if it is and get a name for it and a diagnosis, it can be frustrating for family members. I mean, they could think, well, Mom, you've been to 7 doctors and everybody mm-hmm. says it's in your head. You know, how difficult is that? You run a group for many people that are suffering with chronic pain. So if you want to talk about your own experience or share, you know, other people's experiences, if you can tell us about that frustration first, please.
Okay. Well, the disease that I have unfortunately been diagnosed with is called trigeminal neuralgia. It's a rare disease. It's pretty horrible, horrible pain. So horrible that when I Googled it, I said to my husband, oh, I can't have that. Like, I was in such denial. And I think human beings are in denial of pain because that's why people don't know how to talk to people about pain. They don't. And pain becomes competitive. And it's like, you know, if I start to talk about pain now, and I know that I'm already off the subject, but if I start to talk about pain, somebody will say, oh, yeah, I also have that. So there's like, it's a very narcissistic thing. And everybody's pain is their own. And you cannot understand another person's pain. I don't care how trained you are. Because pain is something that's very subjective. It lies within the self.
Yeah, it does. But what is, we want to also talk about the family members and their
yes.
reaction, please.
Okay. Family members are one step removed from the patient. So as we all know, families are complicated. You know, I think Tolstoy wrote that, well, unhappy families are unique in their own way. I don't know the exact quote. That there are many ways of screwing up as a family. And, you know, people are predictive in terms of what they can do. So it's already, you're talking about family already being a complex situation. So say, you know, there's a family where there's already trauma, psychiatric illness already. And then, you know, the mom goes down with chronic pain. Now, my children are grown, so I'm not taking care of little kids, but I feel for people that are mothers. And they can't physically take care of their children. And people think they're lazy or they're making it up, or it's really tragic. And these tragedies go from generation to generation. That we really, it's an intergenerational trauma. And it just is kind of a difficult topic. People don't know what to do. People don't know what to say. So chronic pain patients or feel isolated, and families of people who have chronic pain feel even more isolated because they don't even go to the doctors. So they're like, "Who? What is their point in this?" And they feel guilty if they get upset because it is upsetting. They resent it because they've lost their mother who was capable of doing all these things. And in this case, I'm a grandmother, and my children are, they've worked with me. They've lived through this. It's been 6 years. And, oh, I love, you know, I'm so grateful for them. But it was a process. I had to work very hard. But work that is so, so worth it.
So, again, Michelle, I'm so sorry what you're going through. And I want to wish you a complete recovery quickly. But I do want to bring up how lonely it may have mm-hmm. been for you mm-hmm. if you're comfortable in discussing how lonely mm-hmm. is or has mm-hmm. been for you while going through this. You know,
oh,
like
it's
you
incredible.
Said,
so lonely.
Yeah, and you said that people, you know, your children are older, and then there are some that have younger children and can't be a mother to the children properly. And there is a sense of loneliness that one may be mm-hmm. going through, whatever mm-hmm. stage they may be in.
Sure.
So,
and it's difficult for different family members in different ways. You could have a child with chronic pain. You talk about guilt of a parent. A parent feels guilty enough to begin with because it's so hard to be a parent. But you have a child who is in constant pain that you can't help them with. That's tough. And I know parents like that.
There are many. There are mm-hmm. many, yes. But, you know, there's a lot of confusion between physical pain and emotional mm-hmm. pain.
Right.
So you have the physical pain, but the emotional pain is also loneliness could bring pain. Sleep patterns could get affected by it. Your eating could get affected. You want to talk about mm-hmm. what these side effects are as a result of your illness.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's a process first to accept an illness like this, a progressive illness that, you know, you're horrified by and you feel like, well, I'm in jail for the rest of my life. I have to say, though, you know, I appreciate your concern about how much I'm suffering, but I'm really not suffering. I've never been happier in my life. I get to do podcasts. I get to meet great people.
You do music. You do music.
So, you know, yes, I am disabled. I can't drive. I can't go places without a lot of pain. I have to take a lot of medicine, but I'm really enjoying my life. I mean, should I keep that a secret? I don't think so. I think that's a wonderful thing, and I'm so grateful that there have been people to help me have a decent life. Even if they didn't get it, they were there, and everybody has been there in their own way. Even if they didn't get it perfectly, I'm still here. And I have a beautiful family, and well, what's more than that? You know, what more can you want?
Well, your attitude is so important to help you get through this mm-hmm. illness. Not everyone has that attitude when they're suffering. The people that you share this with, the group people, people that reach out to you that also suffer from chronic, not mm-hmm. everybody has your attitude and the strength.
Well, they helped me. They helped me get this attitude. The group is as much for the group members as it is for me. I needed a group. I had this disease. I was alone. Nobody knew what it was. I felt like I was crazy. I just, you know, I'd go to doctors and I had a pretty decent medical experience, but, you know, you get to know other people and you hear horrifying stories. There was a woman last week who has trigeminal neuralgia is often a side effect of MS. And there was a woman who had MS and trigeminal neuralgia, and she had some kind of like paralysis in her arm. And her neurologist actually said, it's an MS relapse. Well, you know, this woman had a stroke and could not have early intervention. So we're talking about really important matters of life and death here. And,
absolutely.
You know, and it's ignored. It's ignored, which is, you know, absurd to me, but that's the world.
Right, and that is why we're speaking about it and you're doing podcasts about it so that we make more people aware that mental health can also be brought on your deterioration of one's mental health mm-hmm. possibly
Absolutely.
From chronic Absolutely. Illness.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say, oh, I'm sorry, go on.
It's okay, go on, I'm sorry.
That's all right. So people who have early trauma, like not capital T trauma, but like, you know, not being paid attention to, not being nurtured, not being noticed, not being to be able to be a child and play freely. That's a trauma, but those kids do well in school, they get married, they do all the things they're supposed to do, and they are living quiet lives of desperation. No one understands. So if you get chronic, in a certain way, you're lucky if you get chronic pain, and believe me, I'm not a masochist, but if you get chronic pain, you have no choice but to actually look at yourself and, you know, say, yeah, I did. There were things that I didn't get, and made things hard for me. And yes, I was angry, and I pushed people away, and you know, it didn't help me. But you have to kind of go through that stage. I'm not some, you know, person who, you know, has it all together. I have to work at this every day, and that's one of the reasons I went into analysis, to work on myself, and to, when I became a therapist, to make sure that I had really good supervision, that I'm not doing any of this alone. And so, you know, it's funny that I'm just talking about pain being lonely, and I chose a profession to be lonely as a therapist, but there's a loneliness and an intimacy when you're with another patient, with a patient, that's beautiful. I mean, it's just a wonderful experience to be able to have the merit to do that kind of work.
Absolutely. And you are a Nefesh member, and we always get together at Nefesh, which is 900 therapists, from around the world. I am an executive board member for Nefesh, so I'm giving a shout out to Nefesh. You mentioned the word supervision, and that's why I'm bringing it up. It's so important for every therapist to have an advisor. And we're going off the topic for just a minute, but when somebody looks for a therapist, it's okay to say to the therapist when you call for an appointment, can you tell me, are you in supervision? Who are you in supervision with? Then you know that at least they are doing what's really expected for a therapist to have ongoing supervision. Mm-hmm. You want to add anything?
Yes, I do. This is my chance. A therapist needs to be in their own extensive therapy, because how could you possibly tease out what's yours and what is the person who's sitting in front of you? We have complicated minds. I am been working on this forever, so I have lots of things in my own mind that I don't know. And I would say that through extensive training, I know enough to know how much I don't know. And that gives me respect to know, respect for the human mind to really get the help I need, to know I can't do this myself, to be humble.
Absolutely. And anybody that's interested, you can go on to Nefesh International, and they have so many programs. If we have any therapists listening, go on, check it out, Nefesh International. And they always have, in December, we have a wonderful conference for over 500 members. We haven't had it due to COVID, but God willing, we should all be well this year. The end of December, we will be having it. So for more information, get on to our Nefesh International website. And all through the year, there are trainings that you can get your CEU credits. So let's get back to Michelle.
Okay.
Michelle, I want to speak about you as a therapist sitting now with a group of people that also have chronic pain. How is it for you to watch somebody and you could help them emotionally, but the feeling of helplessness, does that ever come about for you where they're in so much pain and you know that pain?
Well, it's a very interesting question, Ruchama, because in the beginning of starting these support groups, you know, I've been doing support groups since I got my LCSW, and I did my LCSW as a second career. My original training is as a pianist. You know, I have a bachelor's and master's in piano performance. So I started later, though I was a piano teacher. When you're a piano teacher, it's like being a therapist. But when you're a therapist, you're not responsible for them performing in recitals, so you don't have that responsibility. And you finally start to know what you're doing. But I changed careers, really, because I was teaching piano. I was more interested in the kids and their minds than what they played. So I still play piano, but I don't teach anymore. I teach a little bit, but not professionally anymore. But the idea, you know, help me get back on track, because I think I got a little lost or something. I need your help right now.
About the feeling of helplessness.
Okay, yes. Okay, so when I put these groups together, I knew that I had this disease. There was no one to talk to. I started with Facebook groups. I had never been on Facebook in my life. I met all these people all over the world who told me what this was about, and it was pretty awful. But then there were, you know, doctors that were recommended. I mean, because it's the Wild West with this disease. They don't really, I mean, even the best neurosurgeons will say they don't know how to treat it. So, you know, you become a patient, like, you know, you're in a position where you actually do know more than the physician, but you have to do the patient role. So that would be a whole nother radio show about the demoralization that people go through as patients who have chronic illness that can't be explained. That's a whole nother can of worms. But what I tried to do was get a group together, and nobody wanted to be in a group.
So Michelle, you bring up the, you know, that music. You play piano. I'd like to know, how has music helped you through your disease?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my mother was a musician, and while we had a complicated relationship, because my mother had her own trauma to deal with, and she did the best she could under the circumstances, we bonded with music, you know, and I feel even as an adult, when I'm like needy, I'll go to the piano, and it's a way of being connected to my mother. So, you know, I remember when my mother passed away, and I said to her at her funeral, said, you know, at the eulogy, I said, whenever I touch the keys, I will always remember you. So I think it's very deep, and it's very personal, and I love to play the piano. I mean, I listen to music when, you know, when the pain is very bad. Music is a comfort. You don't have to use any, you don't have to open your eyes. You close your eyes, you lie back, and it soothes. It's a medication that has the best side effects. It's wonderful. I'm playing the piano. It's a little hard if I'm not feeling well, so I'll listen sometimes. But every Wednesday, I have a group, not really a group, I have a violinist that I play with regularly. There are a woman who lives in my community, an adult student was taking lessons with my friend. No, she wasn't my friend. My friend is taking lessons with a violin teacher. They're both my friends now. And they became very, very close friends during the pandemic. My friend, the violinist friend, would give her lessons in, I'll use their names, Rebecca's backyard, and Monica would, Rebecca's children would tutor Monica's children, and it was a real, you know, collaboration. And they got to know each other really well over the pandemic. So when I came back to New York, I had spent the majority of the pandemic in our home in Boca Raton, Florida. And when we came back, you know, now Monica and I could play together. And the thing you cannot do on Zoom yet, unless you're real tech savvy, is play chamber music, because there's this delay. And so you can't play two people together. So every Wednesday night, Monica and Rebecca come to my house. It's just like part of my life. And it gets through the week. I know it's there. Different things that get me through the week. But we play first. And it's a thrill for Rebecca because she's an intermediate level violinist and she's learning. She gets to have a pianist every week to play with her teacher. I mean, most people don't get that. And I get to have Rebecca's lovely company and Monica's lovely company, and we play and we have fun and we talk. And then Monica and I work on something. Monica and I have actually given formal concerts together. We've played, well, when we built our house, we created a large living room so that we could concertize, so that I could give concerts with people. I don't know if I'm up to that at
wow.
this point, but... It, you know what? Playing chamber music for a small audience is fun, because music is something that's meant to be shared with people you love. And music communicates in a way that is so far more connected, emotional, real, authentic than words alone. And the people, you know, when we first built our house, my previous violinist, Dr. Martin Nass, who is a retired psychoanalyst who is affiliated with the Contemporary Freudian Society, where I trained. So Marty and I played 5 years, every day, every Monday. So he kind of was with me as this was happening, and he's a lot older than I am. He's in his 90s. And so it was interesting that, you know, I was declining, and he, but we forged a wonderful friendship. And we played music, and we talked about psychoanalysis, and we had, you know, water between playing one piece. It was just such a lovely, lovely experience. And, of course, when Mark moved to California, I was bereft, and but Rebecca came in, and now I play with Monica. And anybody else who's a classical musician wants to play with me, you know, I'm interested, because music is such a wonderful thing, and playing music with another person is a way of connecting, communicating, understanding each other. It's like just so rewarding and so fun, and I'm so grateful that that my mother made me practice as a kid, even though I made it hard for her, because this is something that's really, really helping me, among other things.
Right. Well, I'm very happy that you have that outlet. I wish I knew how to play piano. But what would you like to say? We're running out of time. And I want to know what you want to say to people that may be suffering from chronic pain, may mm-hmm. have anger and rage and loneliness and feel despair or helplessness. What do you want to say? What is that message, please?
So all those feelings are normal. It's really, really hard to do anything with chronic pain. And so it's hard enough to do it without chronic pain, so you add chronic pain on it. So my best advice is to be kind to yourself. Treat yourself with compassion. These feelings don't make you a bad person if they can be put into words. And going, you know, couples therapy I recommend, individual therapy, support groups. We help each other. You don't have to go through it alone.
So I want to thank you, Michelle, and I want to wish you a quick, complete recovery. And anyone that is interested in speaking with Michelle Cohn or part in a group chronic pain, please call MASC, and we will get that information to Michelle, who will contact you. And our number again, 718-758-0400. Michelle, thank you for being on tonight, and wish you just a quick, complete recovery.
Thank you, Rafaela. It was my pleasure.
And I want to remind everyone that if anyone needs a naloxone kit, feel free to call the MASC office, and we can do it over Zoom and mail you a free naloxone kit once you're trained. So again, 718-758-0400. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually for now, hug tight. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisroel, and I'd like to wish everyone a very good evening and a beautiful Shabbos. Thank you again, Michelle, and have a good night.
It's time to put the simcha back into your special events. Superior Caterers will add a touch of perfection to any party. Sheva brachas, bar mitzvah, kiddush, barbecue, corporate event, or any special occasion when only the best will do. Superior Caterers prides itself in its personal customer service and will customize a menu to make a food memory come to life for your guests. From Brooklyn to the Hamptons and everywhere in between, let Superior Caterers add a classy touch to your simcha party. You can also order custom meals from Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot and get a free luscious dessert with your order. Call 800-SIMCHAS for more information. You'll be glad you did. 800-SIMCHAS, and let the simcha begin. 800-SIMCHAS for the ultimate perfection. Certified GLOT under the KAJ and Babad. 800-SIMCHAS, Superior Caterers.
Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? Talkline Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.